Today on Seculo Radio, after chaos erupts in Washington, D.C., President Trump pledges a peaceful transition of power. We'll talk about everything that happened and what's next today on Jay Seculo Live.
Live from Washington, D.C., Jay Seculo Live. Phone lines are open for your questions right now. Call 1-800-684-3110. That's 1-800-684-3110. And now, your host, Jordan Seculo.
Welcome to Seculo Radio. This is Jordan Seculo. My dad will be joining us as well. Just to grab a call, as you can imagine. As we said, there's chaos erupting in Washington, D.C., ultimately led to a much later Electoral College certification process. It played out pretty much the way we expected. There were some challenges, but only two. It was to Arizona, which was the first challenge objection made. And then once that kind of started, I was actually live on Newsmax. It was not long after we were on radio. And then the rioting began. And there's a difference between, you know, we defended the ACLJ and for a long history, civil disobedience. Civil disobedience would be like if those protesters block the doors, block the entrances, block the streets. It's illegal. You get arrested. But it's kind of like something that, but it's not vandalism. It's not destruction. It's not threatening lives. And by the way, for everybody out there who thinks that was Antifa, I mean, I'm sure there were some elements of actors that may not have been there to support President Trump. But come on, look at the pictures. Look at who was there. That's not what Antifa looks like. And it's been, you can actually see well-known people that have been to a lot of Trump rallies that were identified by websites because they're looking to arrest these people. And what was so unfortunate is that because of instead of doing civil disobedience or just a normal Washington protest, a veteran who served her country is dead, shot dead in the Capitol. And still details about that. But let me tell you something. With an office in Washington, D.C., they referenced it yesterday. I was in the office in D.C. and in my office, and we knew that there was this woman driving around D.C. She tried to ram the White House entrance gates. They tried to stop her there with non-lethal force. They could tell this was someone who was, you know, probably disturbed and not someone who had an explosive device, but they didn't know. And then she backed up and started racing through Washington, D.C. Well, right on the corner of our office and the Hart Building, and the Supreme Court's over there, is a police station where they do the security perimeter. It's very small. And she rammed it. I mean, full speed. So you heard that noise and then machine gun fire. They fire immediately. They don't take chances around Washington, D.C. and our nation's capital because it is the seat of our federal government. And of course, when our vice president is there in the building and all members of Congress, both in the House and the Senate, their duty is to protect them. I mean, Capitol Police, if you actually look back in history, are engaged in a lot of combat and have been killed and have had to use deadly force more often than you hear from most police departments around the country. And they were swarmed. They do obviously the people were able to go through those doors. So instead of civil disobedience, we blocking the streets, blocking the doors. You get arrested. It's a small fine. This was past trespassing because they were trying to again move into. You can't just walk onto the floor of the Senate. You can't just walk onto the floor of the House. You can visit, and you can get passes, and you can go through the normal process. Yeah. You know what this also does? It's sad for me because I have young kids who one of my daughter who loved watching coming in while we were doing the impeachment she could watch from the balcony. I don't know when that will be allowed again. It'll be more restrictions because of bad actors who thought they were doing something good. That's not most Trump supporters, but again, do not blame this on anybody, but people who thought they were doing something the president wanted. I mean that is the case. I don't think that's not most people who voted for President Trump with 74 million.
We're going to stay live during the break here. We're going to not take a break on Facebook and Periscope and YouTube and all of our other
buttons. By the way, after everything finished last night, because America got right back to work, they went right back. President Trump pledged a peaceful transition of power.
The challenges facing Americans are substantial. At a time when our values, our freedoms, our constitutional rights are under attack, it's more important than ever to stand with the American Center for Law and Justice. For decades now, the ACLJ has been on the front lines, protecting your freedoms, defending your rights, in courts, in Congress, and in the public arena. And we have an exceptional track record of success. But here's the bottom line. We could not do our work without your support. We remain committed to protecting your religious and constitutional freedoms. That remains our top priority, especially now during these challenging times. The American Center for Law and Justice is on your side. If you're already a member, thank you. And if you're not, well, this is the perfect time to stand with us at ACLJ.org, where you can learn more about our life-changing work. Become a member today, ACLJ.org. Only when a society can agree that the most vulnerable and voiceless deserve to be protected is there any hope for that culture to survive. And that's exactly what you are saying when you stand with the American Center for Law and Justice to defend the right to life. We've created a free, powerful publication offering a panoramic view of the ACLJ's battle for the unborn. It's called Mission Life. It will show you how you are personally impacting the pro-life battle through your support. And the publication includes a look at all major ACLJ pro-life cases, how we're fighting for the rights of pro-life activists, the ramifications of Roe v. Wade 40 years later, Planned Parenthood's role in the abortion industry, and what Obamacare means to the pro-life movement. Discover the many ways your membership with the ACLJ is empowering the right to life. Request your free copy of Mission Life today online at aclj.org/gift.
I'm going to say something on air that I just was telling our audience on Facebook and YouTube. I need to say this because I'm very disheartened by what I saw when I saw terrorists inside the nation's capital, inside the Senate chamber, the House chamber, sitting in the chairs that are used by the Speaker or the President of the Senate. I found that outrageous as someone who spent 3 weeks in that building. And remember what I was doing there. For those of you that are criticizing us, which is not most of you that are watching this or listening to us. When Robert Mueller's investigation began, within months, I became the lead outside counsel defending the president on behalf of the president of the United States. Drew that to a successful conclusion. When an impeachment proceeding began, which was totally bogus as well, I led the outside legal team in conjunction with the White House counsel to defend the president of the United States, Donald Trump. When two congressional committees and the district attorney of New York were trying to get records in a way we felt was inappropriate, I put those three cases together at the Supreme Court of the United States with my colleagues. How dare some of you criticize what we have done defending the president because I said on this broadcast that the vice president of the United States doesn't have the constitutional authority to select electors, which he doesn't. And Mike Pence was right in the way he handled it. That's all I'm going to say about it because we've got Rick Grinnell here as well. I want to talk to Rick about this. I know you do too, Jordan. Andy's here, and we'll talk about this.
Yeah, I mean, Rick, you were very strong in your statement condemning the attacks. I said both liberals, conservatives, most Americans were better than this, and you know the world, I think, saw how quickly we are better than this because while that chaos was going on, and you could imagine that could have continued later into the evening, the various security forces that came in, Rick, whether it was police, National Guard, state troopers, federal forces, and cleared the Capitol, and they were able to go back to business. That's what makes America America, even when we face those kind of, whether it was a kind of a bizarre coup attempt or just trying to squat on the Capitol. They got back to business and finished their job.
Look, I think we need to go back to last summer when a lot of the violence in Portland and Seattle, we were told it was peaceful protesting, but we could see with our own eyes that it was looting and that it was destruction and violence. And they started attacking parks and statues and really going after small businesses. And when this happened, there was an unequivocal call from the conservatives that violence is not the answer and that we should call out Black Lives Matter and Antifa for not being clear enough with their people in the protesting that were immediately moving from protesting into violence. And we did not see that call from the left. You go back and Kamala Harris was trying to raise money in order to get people out of prison that had just been looting and doing these things. She said it would continue. Joe Biden was not that clear about Antifa and the Black Lives Matter moments where individuals within those protests immediately started looting. Now, I get that not every single person should be painted with such a wide brush and say that all of BLM was a mass movement of looting. We get that. Protesting, and I see it all over my hometowns in California, protesting and standing up to change policy is as American as it comes. Yep. It's what we do in a democracy. But I was proud yesterday to see unequivocally all of the conservatives immediately rush to say violence is never the answer. It was a very sad day to watch that. Mm. We can never resort to violence. Protesting is appropriate. And when people are upset about the election, they get to protest. They get to petition the courts. They get to petition through the constitutional rights of what to do inside the Capitol. But when barriers are broken by individuals, that's unacceptable. I did not see the left be consistent. I saw them immediately scream yesterday about the Trump protesters and some who broke into the Capitol and did terrible things, and we all condemned that. And I saw the left do that yesterday, but I did not see the left do it last summer. Conservatives did both. They did it last summer, and they did it when the Trump protesters broke through and whoever they were. Now, let's also talk about who these individuals are. I am all for using cameras and video footage to identify each an individual who broke into the Capitol illegally, committed violence or squatting or whatever they did when they break through the Capitol. That's breaking the law. And I think that they should all be identified. Transparency should be paramount. And that every single individual should be prosecuted to the fullest extent of the law. This is what we do in a democracy.
And that's 100% correct. You know, Andy, you and I have defended civil disobedience for pro-life protesters.
Yes.
But I'm not defending the bombing of an abortion clinic. Okay, there's a distinction. And one is civil protest, even civil disobedience, which is a violation of the law. But it's trespassing. And it usually, in those cases, it was kind of like the lunch counter sentence. It was people in front of the doors to the abortion clinic. This was violence by terrorists, domestic terrorists, in my view, that were dangerous, really dangerous.
That's true, Jay. You know, the fact that we have a democracy today does not give the person the right to resort to violent acts, acts that are terrible and awful, that undermine really the processes of government. That's not right.
I want to say, there, you know, for all of you, I'm seeing it right. I saw it all last night. Oh, this was just Antifa.
No,
it wasn't. No, it was mostly it was people who came to a rally for President Trump, and some of those people committed, as Rick said, acts of violence. That's not the majority of people who voted for President Trump or support President Trump and his policies, but that is who it was. I'm not saying there aren't other instigators that come around. Like Rick said, you got to identify them, but there were already people being identified in the photos from President Trump's rallies. So the fact that you're trying to blame this on other groups, you don't have to take the blame. It's not your fault if you didn't do these acts. It's not your fault because you voted for President Trump and you supported his policies. But don't try to shift the blame. You know, just say violence is wrong. It doesn't matter who it was. And you know what the problem was? People were calling us traitors last night for condemning violence. That's pretty sick, because you know what this violence meant? We didn't get the real debate, the real objections, so that American people could watch it. It happened late at night. I'm glad they were able to get the job done and get the Capitol secure. But we didn't get to see those objections. And there were senators who I think made the right decision, like Marsha Blackburn and Bill Hagerty, Kelly Loeffler, who felt like they were no longer comfortable making those objections anymore after their lives were at risk. There were a couple of senators who still felt it was. Arizona had already begun. It was in the middle of the objection to Arizona. And there was only one other state objected to, and that was Pennsylvania, and only six senators, six signed on to Arizona, seven to Pennsylvania. There was initially a group of 13. And remember this, we told you yesterday, that vote was never going to succeed. It was just going to be a good debate for America to see. But you couldn't have that debate after that violence.
And if the vote's not going to succeed. The pressure that was put on Mike Pence, Rick, I thought was outrageous by the people that were making comments. He chickened out. I mean, the man has been he's been very loyal to the president and to the country. But people understand that when you and I, we take oaths as lawyers, you take an oath to defend the Constitution.
Yeah. Yeah, and Mike Pence is a friend of mine. He's a great guy, and he's a great patriot. Look, let me just go back on the protesting, because I think this is a really good, important point for our listeners. You know, when I have some friends here in California who they're not left, they're not right, they're not actually that political, but they took their kids to a Black Lives Matter rally because they were sympathetic to wanting to make sure that Black lives did matter. And not so much the movement, but the small Black Lives Matter, the BLM small case. And they didn't know anything about the actual official movement, but they felt like Black lives do matter and that more needed to be done. So they took their children there. When they saw the signs and they saw the violence, they actually walked back and they said, you know, this is not for us. We're going to educate our children on the larger issue, the general issue, but this movement is too scary for us and we don't embrace everything about it. And I feel the same way about the Trump supporters who you know, overwhelmingly, of course, went to Washington to protest and do what is legal and constitutionally right and to make their voices heard. It should be celebrated what they actually did in Washington. But the few people who take it and immediately go to the next level, I think have to be condemned. They're not a part of the movement, an acceptable part of the movement, and we need to move to say that is unacceptable. Whether it's on the left or the right, we never resort to violence.
Let me tell you something. We come back, we'll read the full statement from President Trump that he released after the Electoral College votes were certified. And that was late in the evening, so I want to make sure we read that for all of you. We come back on Jay Sekulow Live.
Only when a society can agree that the most vulnerable and voiceless deserve to be protected is there any hope for that culture to survive. And that's exactly what you are saying when you stand with the American Center for Law and Justice to defend the right to life. We've created a free, powerful publication offering a panoramic view of the ACLJ's battle for the unborn. It's called Mission Life. It will show you how you are personally impacting the pro-life battle through your support. And the publication includes a look at all major ACLJ pro-life cases, how we're fighting for the rights of pro-life activists, the ramifications of Roe v. Wade 40 years later, Planned Parenthood's role in the abortion industry, and what Obamacare means to the pro-life movement. Discover the many ways your membership with the ACLJ is empowering the right to life. Request your free copy of Mission Life today online at aclj.org/gift. The challenges facing Americans are substantial. At a time when our values, our freedoms, our constitutional rights are under attack, it's more important than ever to stand with the American Center for Law and Justice. For decades now, the ACLJ has been on the front lines, protecting your freedoms, defending your rights, in courts, in Congress, and in the public arena. And we have an exceptional track record of success. But here's the bottom line. We could not do our work without your support. We remain committed to protecting your religious and constitutional freedoms. That remains our top priority, especially now during these challenging times. The American Center for Law and Justice is on your side. If you're already a member, thank you. And if you're not, well, this is the perfect time to stand with us at aclj.org, where you can learn more about our life-changing work. Become a member today. aclj.org.
Welcome back to Jay Sekulow Live. This is Jordan Sekulow. You know, I thought it was, Will, how long was that remarks by Vice President Pence?
We have a two-minute
version. I thought it was important for everyone to hear, and then I will read to you the statement from the president that came immediately following the certification of the Electoral College. So for all of you who think he's out there still denying that, you know, that this fight continues, it's actually, he said the fight is now over in the statement. But I want to play, because this is more bigger, the idea about what this means for our country. And as I was watching this, you know, the second night in a row, we've been basically not asleep. But I saw Vice President Pence, and these remarks they caught my ear, and they made me feel pretty good, actually, at that moment. After seeing so much chaos and destruction, and of course, loss of life. We know four people killed in that one. Veteran shot, and let's play it, Vice President Pence.
Thanks to the swift efforts of U.S. Capitol Police, federal, state, and local law enforcement, the violence was quelled. The Capitol is secured, and the people's work continues. We condemn the violence that took place here in the strongest possible terms. We grieve the loss of life in these hallowed halls, as well as the injuries suffered by those who defended our Capitol today. And we will always be grateful to the men and women who stayed at their posts to defend this historic place. To those who wreaked havoc in our Capitol today, you did not win. Violence never wins. Freedom wins. And this is still the people's house. And as we reconvene in this chamber, the world will again witness the resilience and strength of our democracy. For even in the wake of unprecedented violence and vandalism at this Capitol, the elected representatives of the people of the United States have assembled again on the very same day to support and defend the Constitution of the United States. So may God bless the lost, the injured, and the heroes forged on this day. May God bless all who serve here and those who protect this place. And may God bless the United States of America. Let's get back to work.
You know, I thought about, Rick, you said yesterday that, you know, God's in control of this, and that's correct, which Mike was clearly referencing, for praying for God's continued blessing on America, which I believe that's exactly the right thing to say. But it was interesting also, he closed it with, let's get back to work. This was important because you also served as our highest diplomat in Germany, a G7 country. This was important for the world to see that, even with this unbelievable disruption and chaos, that by the end of the night, early into the morning, the matters were resolved.
Absolutely, and I think that's an incredibly important point, because we are just like every other country where we have citizens that are frustrated and that don't agree with the government. The difference is that we have a process, we have a legal process, and we know how to immediately come down on law and order's side, follow the rules, follow the law, follow the Constitution, and get back to work. That is the hallmarks of an amazing democracy. And for the Vice President, after that terrible day yesterday, to immediately say, we're fixing this problem. Those who breached will be prosecuted. This is terrible. But now we, as responsible members of the body that's governing the greatest country in the history of the world, are going to get back to business. And so I think we need to also talk a little bit about the media. This has really been, I think, a long time in coming. I saw for the first time yesterday, and I tweeted it out, USA Today, Gannett paper, has issued a statement to the reporters that they cannot get political on social media, that they cannot be commentating on individual politicians or individual actions, that they've got to stick to journalism. I want to applaud that move because I think it's very rare and way late, but very good. And I think other outlets need to do that, and we need to enforce that, because what's happening to our media is journalism is dead, and all of the outlets have become slaves to the business model, and that means clicks and loud black and white opinions. Nuances are gone. The gray area is gone because people don't click on it. It doesn't sell. And so they're racing to the extreme and radical positions, and they're hiring people who just give opinion rather than do the hard work of journalists. Now, I know that that doesn't mean every single person in journalism does that, but I do have to say that an overwhelming number of outlets have shamefully let their standards yep. down. And this causes many problems. It causes frustrations, certainly on conservative on the conservative side, and we got to put big tech in there as well. What they're doing by silencing voices is not helping the situation. They're making the frustration more pronounced, and I would say the situation worse.
It was interesting. We have a on YouTube super chat said that as a lifelong conservative black man, I have endured more than most conservative have. We have suffered a big defeat. That does not mean we abandon our conviction and act like undisciplined children. That's a very good statement. And I agree with everything Rick said, too.
That's right. You know, we were talking about this. The policies, the way that government was beginning to function again, like the VA, I think about it, or foreign policy or domestic policy, even the midst of COVID, the economy, protecting the rights of the unborn. This administration, you know, unfortunately, some of this will be overshadowed, but long term, think about the three Supreme Court nominees. Think about Justice Amy Barrett. Think about Gorsuch. Think about Kavanaugh and those battles. And again, while there will be people who say, "Well, this entire incident will be," this cloud to hang over President Trump and the Facebook bans and the Twitter bans. The truth is, it is a sad day in a sense because, as he said, and I'll read the statement, because those policies were so great that we were finally starting to drain the swamp, that we had shifted the way the foreign policies Rick talked about, and that we had changed the way we did our domestic policy. The economy was booming, even got going through COVID, Project Warp Speed, a vaccine created, record time that everybody told President Trump could never happen, that he was lying to everybody. And yet it happened. So, you know, you don't want to forget any of that. But you also don't ignore this. This is what the president said right after the Congress certified the electoral votes. Even though I totally disagree with the outcome of the election and the facts bear me out, nevertheless, there will be an orderly transition on January 20th. I've always said we would continue our fight to ensure that only legal votes were counted. While this represents the end of the greatest first term in presidential history, it's only the beginning of our fight to make America great. So again, there it is. That is the president's statement. Not ours, the president of the United States. Back, second half hour, Jay Sekulow Live. Go to aclj.org to learn what's going on. Facebook, YouTube, Periscope. Share this with your friends and family. Important discussion.
For decades now, the ACLJ has been on the front lines, protecting your freedoms, defending your rights, in courts, in Congress, and in the public arena. The American Center for Law and Justice is on your side. If you're already a member, thank you. And if you're not, well, this is the perfect time to stand with us at ACLJ.org, where you can learn more about our life-changing work. Become a member today, ACLJ.org.
Live from Washington, D.C., Jay Sekulow Live. And now, your host, Jordan Sekulow.
I want to report the news to you, too, that is, there's news that Chuck Schumer has called for Vice President Pence to initiate the 25th Amendment. That's when a majority of the cabinet votes to remove the president. Now, that's Chuck Schumer calling for that, but he didn't leave it there. He said, if not, we should start impeachment proceedings immediately. So he said this, called for this publicly now. Now, some of you may be thinking, and we've, of course, defended the president impeachment. You know, it's not many days left here. I mean, we're talking about 13 days. And so could that happen that quickly?
They could do it in 48 hours.
They could. I don't think so. I don't see this happening, not just because of Republican opposition, but because...
It would be too divisive for the country.
It would take something, some action by the president to like encourage violence, and I think that if that happened, I could maybe, who knows what would happen? I don't know.
Yeah.
But if he does what he says in his statement, which is the peaceful transition of power, things kind of go quietly, and just kind of finish out the business, the work, focus on getting the vaccine out, finishing up your job as president. And moving past this, and maybe making a speech about this ultimately as things kind of settle, because I'd like to see him say that kind of on camera.
Yeah,
I think that would help the country.
What would you like him to say?
Just the statement that, you know, he like a lot of Americans, like a lot of us, think that there was a lot of wrong in this election, and that we should never have another election like this where we allow a pandemic to overpower the laws of the Constitution, state laws. I also think that it's important for everybody to understand, you call in like a senator or traitor who's been supporting President Trump the whole time, or the vice president and members of his cabinet, us who have defended him at U.S. Supreme Court, beat Mueller and his team who are going after the president hard, and then an impeachment by the Democrats with Adam Schiff, full-on impeachment and trial. The state legislatures in the states that were the six states in question, I know at least four of those, they are controlled by Republican. I think in all six they are.
They didn't do a thing.
None of them acted. They were the only ones with the...
And by the way, that's what the Constitution...
They had the constitutional authority...
Correct.
...to put in a new slate of electors, not because of a court decision, because they believed, as Republican majorities in the state, that the election was run illegally and wrong. So they could have put in. So Pennsylvania could have done it. They didn't need the vice president to tell them that. Michigan.
Georgia.
Arizona. I mean, we could keep going down the list. It would have been Wisconsin. They didn't do it.
And that is what's important.
So why is your frustration at the branches that can't do it when you're frustrated? And so you're targeting the U.S. Capitol. Instead of, again, people were just letting their state legislators get away with doing nothing.
Yeah, and of course, the understand something. Even as these horrible protests, Wes, you were talking about this during the break, that you know these terrible protests that are going on in Portland right now and some of these was in other parts of the country. And they're horrible, and they're destructive, and they're destroying property. But you know what? This is going into the House of Government, the people's house. And... sitting yourself in the seat or the chair of the Senate president or the Speaker of the House as if what? This was some kind of false coup attempt? I mean, that's what it looks like to the world, like nonsense. But it's a felony. It's federal. In my mind,
people died.
There are four dead Americans. Think about that. And those states that wanted to act could have acted. And that's what the Constitution says. The Constitution rests it with the states, not with Mike Pence.
Yeah.
Not with his lawyers.
Not with senators even.
Not even with you. It's your representatives.
The votes weren't in the House. They didn't have the votes in the House. The Democrats had the majority. And the Senate was tight too. So they didn't have the votes. But guess who did? The state legislatures. I didn't see any of you those college traders. Massive protest out there, and I'm not calling for you to
do
violence. But you didn't protest for a month out there. They had 6 weeks to do this, and they had the votes. That they didn't have the backbone. They wanted someone to tell them to do it. Well, that's not how it works. They had the constitutional authority change the outcome. They didn't, and this is now the outcome.
The challenges facing Americans are substantial. At a time when our values, our freedoms, our constitutional rights are under attack, it's more important than ever to stand with the American Center for Law and Justice. For decades now, the ACLJ has been on the front lines, protecting your freedoms, defending your rights, in courts, in Congress, and in the public arena. And we have an exceptional track record of success. But here's the bottom line. We could not do our work without your support. We remain committed to protecting your religious and constitutional freedoms. That remains our top priority, especially now during these challenging times. The American Center for Law and Justice is on your side. If you're already a member, thank you. And if you're not, well, this is the perfect time to stand with us at ACLJ.org, where you can learn more about our life-changing work. Become a member today, ACLJ.org. Only when a society can agree that the most vulnerable and voiceless deserve to be protected is there any hope for that culture to survive. And that's exactly what you are saying when you stand with the American Center for Law and Justice to defend the right to life. We've created a free, powerful publication offering a panoramic view of the ACLJ's battle for the unborn. It's called Mission Life. It will show you how you are personally impacting the pro-life battle through your support. And the publication includes a look at all major ACLJ pro-life cases, how we're fighting for the rights of pro-life activists, the ramifications of Roe v. Wade 40 years later, Planned Parenthood's role in the abortion industry, and what Obamacare means to the pro-life movement. Discover the many ways your membership with the ACLJ is empowering the right to life. Request your free copy of Mission Life today online at aclj.org/gift.
Hey, welcome back to the broadcast, everyone. You know, I want to say something first to my friend Mike Pence, the Vice President of the United States, who did exactly what he was authorized to do under the United States Constitution and got a lot of flack for it, but he was right. I want you to think about this for those of you that are posting things that are so, it's such nonsense if you think about it. Do you really think the presiding officer of the United States Senate should have the authority on his own to select who the next president of the United States is going to be simply by saying, I reject these particular electors? I mean, think about that for a minute. Let's think about first principles. We're a constitutional republic. You know, Ben Franklin famously said, when was asked after the drafting of the Declaration of Independence and ultimately then, of course, at the drafting of the Constitution, he was asked, what do we have, Dr. Franklin? And he said, a republic, madam, if you can keep it. Now, the good news is we did keep it. With all of the violence yesterday inside our house, the Capitol, as the Vice President said, let's get back to work, they did. But, you know, Wes, you're a retired colonel in the United States Army, but you're also a retired chaplain and a priest. You said something during the break that I think is important for our audience to hear, and that is basically a return to some first principles here and understand what we've got.
Yeah. Our culture, we have actually gone about somehow tacitly approving cruelty and violence and bad language and name calling and you know, the media and those on the left up until yesterday have actually tacitly approved some of the demonstrations that cost people's lives, that burned down police precincts, that destroyed property. And yesterday I was so shocked and teary-eyed watching this. But it should be a call to America to wake up and to repent and for everyone to stop the mean-spiritedness and the cruelty on both sides, on all sides, because it has got to stop. That's not America. But here's the thing, Jay. It's happening in America. Yep. And as citizens, as individuals, as party leaders, whatever our position is, we've got to stand up and say enough is enough on all forms of violence and cruelty and the things like we saw yesterday, but not just what we saw yesterday, the things we've been witnessing since last spring in America. There is never any justification for violence, for the destruction of property, for attacking law enforcement officers. It is absolutely uncalled for. And I really, really hope that this is a wake-up call, that as a nation, we will repent and come back together.
The scary part of this, I think, for all of us that watch this and participate in the body politic is it was a total breakdown, Andy, of the rule of law. I mean, the rule of law means we are a nation of laws. We have rules and regulations and laws, and if you don't follow them, you get prosecuted.
That's right, Jay. The rule of law is the most important thing. We are a country of laws and not of just men and women who take the law into their own hands. I think what impressed me more than anything else was the fact that after this blatant and horrible attack on the citadel of democracy, we got back to work. We immediately quelled the insurrection, if you will, the violence, the hatred, the bigotry, the evil that was shown, and I saw people taking shields of police officers and breaking the windows to get into the Capitol. As you mentioned earlier, I saw somebody sitting in the chair where the Chief Justice of the United States sat and presided over an impeachment trial with his feet up on the desk. But after that mob was cleansed and cleared from the Capitol, from the House and from the Senate, what impressed me more than anything else is we put it immediately behind us and got back to work, got back to the process of counting electoral votes, of hearing objections, of voting, and of finally certifying whether you agree with the election or not. The process of the Constitution took effect, certifying the new president and the vice president. And that's what impressed, not a week later, not a month later, but on the same day that this happened, we got back to work and concluded what the Constitution told us we had to do. That impressed me very much. And I have to also agree with you. I was impressed with Mike Pence. The man is a patriot. He is a leader. The way he spoke, the way he called for an end to violence, saying that never, it doesn't ever win, that freedom wins, that this is the people's house, the resilience and strength of our democracy showed itself. We are not a lost cause. We've got to put this violence and this horror behind us. But what impressed me again, and I say it again, we got back to work and concluded the business of certifying the election immediately.
Yep. I thought, you know, again, something so unfortunate, of course, the loss of life, most unfortunate. But second was that we didn't really get to see that debate, you know, on the objections.
You're right.
And I think that was important for America to see because, remember, a lot of that debate has been on liberal kind of leaning cable news or conservative leaning cable news or shows like ours and radio and television and you know, on Facebook and in courts where you know they really only got to procedural matters and long briefs and documents, but to be able to see, I think it was going to be an opportunity to see in during the day while a lot of people are still home because of COVID and things like that, that they could tune in on both sides of the aisle and see why senators were objecting and why House members were objecting, and there were still two states that were objected to that wouldn't have changed the outcome of the election. There were not enough electoral votes there, so think about that. Even if you want to point out the six and then seven senators who did object in Arizona, it was Ted Cruz, Hawley. That was the first one before even the violence began. Senators Hyde-Smith, Marshall, Kennedy, and Tuberville. They were their only other objection came with Pennsylvania, and the only additional person was Senator Rick Scott. Those senators did not put forward any other objections. They didn't object to, Wisconsin. They didn't object to Michigan. They didn't object to Georgia. And they could have. So you realize we didn't get to have that debate. And even those who were going to object to enough where it would have been outcome determinative, even if we knew the vote was not going to be there, decided not to. So you're calling them not traitors. But in fact, they kind of did the same thing because they realized they weren't able to really have the debate anymore. And that's sad too, because we don't want another election like this where the laws aren't followed and signatures aren't required and you don't have to request ballots and they just get mailed to everybody and there's no verification and people don't have faith in their process. And we didn't get to have that debate. And it would have been a civil debate, but it would have been one that people didn't really get to see yet. On both sides about why they're making those objections. And that is something that is also disheartening from this. And again, I just point you back to where if you really felt, as many of us do, that this election was wrong, that there were a lot of things done wrong in the election, something appeared illegal conduct. Some people throw out terms like fraud. I think you just focus on what was done illegally because there were state laws changed by courts, not the legislatures. And in those states that were the swing states, the legislatures where that happened, they happened to, where their courts changed their rules, they were Republican, and they had the right, power, constitutional, and under their state laws, to put in new electors. President Trump could be in a second term if they had the backbone to do that. They had 6 weeks to do it. They didn't need a court to tell them to. They didn't have to put forward evidence. They could have just said, you know, we've seen everything. It was because you changed the rules of the game. That's it. And they didn't do it. And then you're trying to force Mike Pence to do something we already said he couldn't do. He couldn't get rid of electors. We said if as much as he could possibly do was maybe ask a state to recertify. And at the point of what happened yesterday, do you think any of those states, which, by the way, already didn't have the backbone to do it for, were after that violence going to somehow shift it and give? No. So
it's self-defeating.
You're just not looking at the right places. And we were trying to tell you the entire time about the states, but you kept focusing on thinking that the president alone could do it, or the vice president alone could do it, or a senate alone could do it, or a house could do it, controlled by Nancy Pelosi. And you focused on the wrong place and the wrong people. We kept telling you it was the state legislatures. They could do it, and they didn't. I think just that overshadow of a debate that would have, I think, helped a lot of Americans. Probably what we need to see now is a speech from the president that kind of puts this all to rest. And he could say that, I disagree with a lot of what was done in the election. That's fine. A lot of Americans do, too. But he also can condemn violence.
Well, he needs to condemn the violence. I mean, he did that video yesterday, but I think condemning the violence, I think saying that he disagreed with the election results, which he obviously did, a lot of us did, and he challenged it as many court cases as he could do, and those cases were not successful. And even though he disagrees with the outcome of those decisions, he respects the rule of law, thus there will be a peaceful transfer of power, which he said there will be. But it was horrific that we had to go through this yesterday. 4 Americans are dead in our nation's capital, next to our office in Washington, D.C. It's a little personal. We'll be back with more in a minute.
Only when a society can agree that the most vulnerable and voiceless deserve to be protected is there any hope for that culture to survive. And that's exactly what you are saying when you stand with the American Center for Law and Justice to defend the right to life. We've created a free, powerful publication offering a panoramic view of the ACLJ's battle for the unborn. It's called Mission Life. It will show you how you are personally impacting the pro-life battle through your support. And the publication includes a look at all major ACLJ pro-life cases, how we're fighting for the rights of pro-life activists, the ramifications of Roe v. Wade 40 years later, Planned Parenthood's role in the abortion industry, and what Obamacare means to the pro-life movement. Discover the many ways your membership with the ACLJ is empowering the right to life. Request your free copy of Mission Life today online at aclj.org/gift. The challenges facing Americans are substantial. At a time when our values, our freedoms, our constitutional rights are under attack, it's more important than ever to stand with the American Center for Law and Justice. For decades now, the ACLJ has been on the front lines, protecting your freedoms, defending your rights, in courts, in Congress, and in the public arena. And we have an exceptional track record of success. But here's the bottom line: we could not do our work without your support. We remain committed to protecting your religious and constitutional freedoms. That remains our top priority, especially now during these challenging times. The American Center for Law and Justice is on your side. If you're already a member, thank you. And if you're not, well, this is the perfect time to stand with us at aclj.org, where you can learn more about our life-changing work. Become a member today, aclj.org.
Secular Radio. Again, we wanted to spend this show, and we're live, and we didn't want to take a lot of calls. We didn't want to get in debates with people yet. This is still very fresh, still very real. I want to again read, because this happened very late at night. The president, you know, has been blocked from, you can argue about that being wrong or right, but he's blocked from at least Facebook and Instagram until after his presidency. Is it also Twitter still blocked as well? Is that until after his presidency also, Will, or is that just for right now?
Indefinitely.
But his deputy chief of staff, Dan Scavino, very late, early hours actually of the morning. I happened to still be up, of course, because I was watching all of this happen and what the Senate was doing in the House. The statement, he put the statement out when the Electoral College votes were certified from President Trump, because the president couldn't do it from his own Twitter account anymore or his own Facebook account. Quote, "Even though I totally disagree with the outcome of the election and the facts bear me out, nevertheless, there will be an orderly transition on January 20th. I've always said we will continue our fight to ensure that only legal votes were counted. While this represents the end of the greatest first term in presidential history, it's only the beginning of our fight to make America great again." So, you know, I don't have a lot of issues with anything in that statement. I think that it was a great term policy-wise. If you're a conservative, it was excellent, especially if you were more like a libertarian-leaning conservative, a populist. And even with COVID, fighting back against those restrictions, three Supreme Court nominees, so many of those court appeals, I mean, filling the Court of Appeals with conservatives and district courts too, winding down wars, keeping America safe. We didn't have massive terrorism in our streets from foreign terrorism, Islamic terrorism. Peace deals in the Middle East, as of even while yesterday, before all that was happening, new peace deals were being made to isolate Iran. So I think because now the president's not going to have these other platforms to speak, he can still address the nation. I think it probably should happen tonight.
Yep.
And it should just be an address that, like it said, we said we would fight to the end that legal votes were counted. We've said that too. But there was an endpoint. And the endpoint is when the Congress certifies it, and that happened, and the president acknowledged it.
Yeah, and that I think it's important to take these last few minutes and kind of everybody give their perspective on how they see it. I'm going to start with Andy. We'll go to Wes, and then I'll close it out.
Well, I want to pick up the theme that Jordan said. I think we had, as conservatives, a very good first term as the presidency under Donald Trump. The tax decrease, the especially, Jay, the shaping of the Middle East,
yeah,
and the peace that I have seen between Israel and those who would see Israel devastated and destroyed. I think those were important factors. The fact that we put conservative justices, constitutionalists, originalists, people who read the Constitution on the district courts and on the appellate courts, that is something that we can't overlook. The fact that he put America first, that we made America a priority in our thoughts and in our minds. I think those are very important things that you have to give the president credit for having done. I hate to see it having been marred by this last outbreak of violence. That was a terrible thing, but again, I repeat, we got back to work immediately after that, went back into session in the Congress, went back into the House of Representatives, and the chamber was filled, I regret, as Jordan said, that we weren't able to see the debate because that's part of the process. But nonetheless, it was concluded in a constitutional manner.
You know, we're getting a lot of comments like this. And, you know, I don't think these are necessarily ACLJ supporters. And I understand some people are just mad about the election results. I get that. We are too. But Raul wrote, "You guys are making me sick. Where's your loyalty to the Constitution and to the American patriots?" Let me just make this really clear to everybody. The people that broke into the Capitol didn't break into the Capitol while it was not in business, while they weren't in session. They didn't just block the doors in civil disobedience. They had no fidelity to the Constitution. You know why? They were breaking in on a constitutional function of Congress, of the American government. So if you believe in the Constitution, you wouldn't be supporting people breaking in to stop a constitutional process that includes the ability to object to electors and to throw out electoral votes. They have that ability. They didn't have the votes to do it. We knew that going in. But if you are the people who are, I guess, supporting going in and trampling or trying to prevent a duty, constitutional duty of our executive branch, the vice president acting his legislative role, and of course Congress, the legislative branch. That is not conservatism, folks. Okay? That's not how conservatives fight. That's not how, you know, libertarians fight. We win with our ideas. We fight back in courts, in the court of public opinion, and we bring people to our side. We don't trample on the Constitution, and we don't try to prevent constitutional acts like the certification of an election, which allow for changes to electors and objections to be made. But those objections, only two were made. Not even enough to change the outcome of the election. That's because of the violence. Okay? That's because of what you're saying was the, you're making it sick for not supporting it. I mean, no, it's sick that you even think that was right. People are dead. A young woman who served her country, and I don't know exactly what she did for, you know, where she was running through, what barricade, but was a veteran, is dead. And for a moment there, it reminded me of what it looked like in Tehran, because you see those protesters storm, and now they're doing it in the streets. That's okay. We allow that in America. But you realize then quickly, we're not Tehran, and the vice president was back in the chair, and the debate went on, and there were objections again later on the night to Pennsylvania's electoral college votes, and 2 hours more of debate, and it was late in the evening. And it was finished. The votes were certified, and the president then made his statement too.
Wes?
Yeah, you're exactly right, Jordan. What happened yesterday was the antithesis of patriotism. The Constitution is the supreme law of the land. What happened was illegal. It was unconscionable. It was undemocratic. Back to what Andy was saying, though, I think President Trump's policies, this administration's policies, have done wonderful things. Things like this haven't been done since the presidency of Ronald Reagan. You mentioned the Middle East, the economy, foreign policy, the military. It will be a shame if this is how his legacy ends and what this administration will be remembered for, because up until this, it was pretty remarkable.
I'm just going to close with this. I'm thankful to the Lord that we have a constitution that prevailed yesterday. And while I don't like the outcome of the election, I like the outcome of the process. That the process actually prevailed, and that Mike Pence was able to get back in that chair and do the people's business, and that our senators, Republicans and Democrats and independents that are there, went on and allowed votes and made objections. And it didn't help the cause of the objections to have this, so it was self-defeating. But I just want to urge those that are watching and listening to pray for our country, and pray for our leaders, pray for the president, President Trump, pray for the vice president. Pray for, and you're not going to like this, the president-elect of the United States, because that's what the Constitution says. And we are instructed by Scripture to pray for those in authority. That would include the president-elect of the United States, Joe Biden, and the vice president-elect, Kamala Harris, because that's what the Scriptures command. We'll talk to you tomorrow.
For decades now, the ACLJ has been on the front lines, protecting your freedoms, defending your rights, in courts, in Congress, and in the public arena. The American Center for Law and Justice is on your side. If you're already a member, thank you. And if you're not, well, this is the perfect time to stand with us at ACLJ.org, where you can learn more about our life-changing work. Become a member today, ACLJ.org.